again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus, as the great one, Doug Tonis, and I take this this shining monster out onto the streets of Illinois. We look back, and lo and behold, we have an honored guest, our good friend, Mark Kay from Australia, the founder and primary entertainer on Bulls HQ. How you doing, brother?
I'm well, Fred. How are you?
Living the dream. Living the dream, my man. And Doug, how you doing?
As always.
I'm doing great. It's funny just to see you guys on the same call and not, you know, just spewing hatred at each other. It's just so different from Twitter. Like, we're all friendly now. I don't understand exactly how this dynamic works.
Oh, Doug, come on. Mark loves me.
Neither do we.
I think he's very nice. but it's great that we could finally get some of this debating that we've been doing on Twitter. Mark, be honest. How many minutes did you spend looking up for pro Nuaba tweets over the past year from me this weekend? It had to be hours. So I did take some solace in that after you irritated me.
It was definitely not hours. I mean, it's so easy to find tweets. Like, you're the Donald Trump of Bulls Twitter in the sense that there's a tweet for everything. And it really just takes, you know, using your handle, going to the advanced Twitter search, typing in CB Fred, and then the keywords, the keywords I used on this occasion were Nuaba and Valentine. And within the space of maybe 10 seconds, I found several tweets referring to Nuaba as part of the core that will win a seventh title, so it didn't take me long.
In my head, I had you and a team of Australians that you were paying by the hour scouring my tweets over last year. I got one more question before you get started. Great news, my son made the travel team here for basketball. I'm ecstatic. The team's name is the Hawks, and I have this incredible idea that I got from Medieval Times. They have Medieval Times down in Australia? Do they have that?
Maybe.
All right, so
I'm not really across Australian history that much, to be honest with you, Fred.
In Medieval Times, this huge hawk guy walks out with this kind of, like, I guess, arm case or armband, and this huge hawk flies around the entire theater twice and scares all the patrons. You know, almost hits him in the head. I want to do the same thing at my son's travel basketball game. I walk out with a huge hawk. He flies around the gym twice and then lands on my arm. You guys like that
idea? Nothing can go wrong there.
All right, let's move on to the question.
Is this a Bulls podcast, or is this something completely unrelated?
I just wanted to get an idea. I came up with that last night, so just woke up to it and wanted to get some opinions. But, hey, thanks for nothing.
Yeah.
All right, let's hit the ground running here. Questions from our studio audience. Is the point of the upcoming season in developing all of the players' assets or winning as many games as possible? For example, cutting back on Jabari or Levine's minutes if they are losing ball games. Are those two things mutually exclusive? Let's go to Doug first, and then we'll go to you, Mark.
Sure. I don't think the point is to develop players at this point. I think the point is to try to win, and you're developing players by attempting to win. You know, at this point, I think you're probably not going to get a super high draft pick because you and I, at least, are both optimists. I'm not sure, Mark, if you're quite as optimistic. But I think you're just going to do the best you can to win games, and you're doing that only with young players. I think the average age of the starting lineup is like 22. So they happen both by default. They are not mutually exclusive. I don't think you try to lose games anymore.
Mark?
Yeah, look, I agree. It's definitely not mutually exclusive. If you're developing players and they're developing accordingly, then hopefully that translates into wins. But yeah, I wouldn't say I'm as optimistic as you two guys, based on, you know, the podcast that I've heard you two in the last few weeks go over, or basically since the off season anyway. So I probably am not as optimistic. So I wouldn't be too concerned if there aren't, you know, 35, 40 wins on the board, but I would be concerned if there's no development. So I think that's got to be the priority, but I do agree that they're not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yeah, so the reason I picked this question, because it leads into the topic of the day, which is the departure of David Nwaba for peanuts to Cleveland. And I, you know, Mark and I went into a huge argument on Twitter about it, and as I do with any Bulls move, I try to say, well, what are they thinking here, right? So the first thing I heard is Nwaba signed for next to nothing for a one-year deal. And it's clear to me that this move was Fred. Pax forcing Fred's hand regarding Chandler Hutchinson. Chandler Hutchinson's 3 inches taller. He's got a longer wingspan. I think he has all the defensive tools to be a much superior player to David Nwaba. But by adding Nwaba to the roster, you're just giving an excuse for Fred to play a more mature player who right now might have, you know, no doubt better defensive pedigree, instead of developing a player like Hutchinson, who hopefully down the road will evolve into a far superior player. What say you? Let's start out with you, Mark, on that one.
Well, here's the thing I don't understand from you, Fred, is the fact that you're predicting the Bulls are going to win between 44 and 47 games. Of course, we have that bet going, but if you want that to be the case, I don't know why you wouldn't want Nwaba on this team.
I don't feel Nwaba is the second coming of Bill Russell and Scottie Pippen and everyone feels
he doesn't need to be.
I think I think all he does well is I think he's a very good defensive player, right? Athletically. But he's not, I don't think he's a great one. And on the offensive end, I think his shooting is so poor that I think it does have a negative overall aspect to the player, where I feel like Hutchinson can develop by the end of this year all around. You have to take both aspects of a player's game. I think he could be overall a better player than Nwaba. Now, is it going to cost him a few wins? Yes, I agree on that. You know, I wish I had a chance to revise my prediction. I know I'll stick by it. I think the Bulls are going to win, honestly, between 40 and 43 games. I know I was a little bit bullish on that. But that's primarily because I think the East is so weak. There's only 6 teams I see that are better than the Bulls. So that's the reason I say that. And I mean, let's be honest, Nwaba is going to be 26 in January. According to your that age, Mark, you should be drinking insurance instead of Gatorade. I mean, that's ancient according to your timeline. And I think that, you know, this kid's significantly younger, significantly taller and longer. I don't feel like the delta between Nwaba and Hutchinson can be massive by the end of this year. Doug, why don't you jump in here with your thoughts?
I don't know. I think losing Nwaba definitely hurts the win column this year. I think it's probably a stretch to hope that Hutchinson is ever as good as Nwaba is. Yeah, sure, he's taller. Okay, that's great. I mean, there's lots of guys who are taller. It doesn't mean they're better. I mean, I think Nwaba is probably going to be a better player. I agree probably with your rationale that they didn't keep him so that they could force them to attempt to develop Hutchinson. That makes sense. I don't think it's a big loss. Nwaba's also not a great player. He's an eighth man on a team, and it's fine. I don't think it's a big deal one way or the other. It's much ado about nothing, in my opinion. You know, I hope Hutchinson is better. Probably won't be. You know, Nwaba's a solid player. He's a solid eighth man, solid rotation player. If Hutchinson is that, then I think we'd be happy with it, too.
Well, let's finish with this question, then. Starting with Doug first, the departure of Nwaba is going to cost the Bulls how many wins?
I don't know, one to two. It really just depends, maybe even zero. It depends entirely on what happens with the rest of the roster. If everyone stays pretty healthy this year, I'd say probably zero, because I'm not sure Hutchinson versus Nwaba makes that big of a swing difference, and I'm not sure either of those guys would end up really as major rotation players based on who's with the roster this year.
And Mark, same question?
Yeah, look, I mean, we're talking about a role play here. And I don't have, you know, these grand delusions that he's anything more than that. But the fact that he signed with the Cavs for $1.5 million, the fact that he led the team in basically, well, he didn't lead the team in free throw attempts, but he was the best at drawing free throws on this team, which is going to be a weakness next season as well. And the fact that the Bulls are starting two guys that on the perimeter who have 3 ACLs between him, I think there could have been room to have a guy like Nwaba on the bench. And we can talk about all we want about him taking minutes away from Chandler Hutchinson or something like that. But in the event Jabari Parker or Zach LaVine, I mean, God forbid, go down with maybe not even a serious injury, but, you know, are out for 2 to 3 weeks or something like that, you're really throwing someone like Hutchinson in the fire sort of thing and putting him in the starting role or asking him to play 20, 25 minutes from the get-go, given that he's a late first-round pick. His body is not developed. He's even 200 pounds. I mean, the guy really needs to put on some size before we can even start talking about him as a defensive player. So, yeah, look, I'm under no illusions here that, or a delusion rather, I should say, that someone like Nwaba would add 5, 6, 7 wins or something like that. It's definitely not the case, but for the fact that he came so cheap, or went to the Cavs so cheap, I should say. It's disappointing to see him playing for the Cavs and not the Bulls, and I think the Bulls really need a defensive player on the wing, and I understand, Fred, that you feel Hutchinson can be that, and I too think he can be a good defensive player in time, but he's not the defensive player that Nwaba can be next season. So if you're all about winning next season, I don't know why you would have any issues with losing, or having issues, rather.
You made the original argument, though, about Parker versus Nwaba, and that's the answer. The team was a terrible offensive team. In the 3 years under Fred, we've never been in the top half, and you're siding with offense over defense, and I happen to agree with that. I think the game's evolved where you need to skew on the offensive side. This team was so bad offensively that guys like Nwaba in this league, the reason they're getting paid $1.7 million is because they're not as valuable to teams as a player like Parker, who's proven to score 20 points per game. I mean, it's a fact. Look at the offensive efficiency stats. The best teams are the offensive teams. So we have to evolve, too. I'd rather have Parker and Nwaba. I'd rather, and I do understand the rationale. So we'll go on.
It doesn't have to be either or, right? Because, you know, Jabari signed for what he signed for. Obviously, he signed for his $20 million. We can say offensive players get paid more than defensive players, all that sort of crap. We can talk about that, but the fact that Nwaba went for $1.5 million, not $10 million, or a number that the Bulls couldn't match or couldn't exercise or entertain, the fact that he went for so cheap, it doesn't need to be either or. It could have been both. That's the annoying part.
I think the bigger picture, though, is back to my original point on it, is that I don't think Pax believes in Fred. I think that was a Gar hire. It's clear on a lot of his public statements. I don't think he's 100% behind Fred Hoiberg. And like Pax, I agree. I don't understand a lot of these incredibly stupid rotational decisions, given massive amounts of minutes to a guy, you know, like Paul Zipser. And we can go down on and on down the line. I think this is a move by the front office to take a chess piece off the chessboard for a younger player that they believe in more than Nwaba. So we'll move on to the next one, but I think that's right, and I know Doug agrees with me on the thinking, and I think it was the right move in that end. If the Bulls were going to be challenging for a title this year, I would have been upset. But I've said from day one, their seventh seed is their goal. So I think that's fine. Next question, and this was a poll question I put out. It's been a while since a team has won a title with their two best players at the 4 and 5. Duncan Robinson and the Spurs come to mind in the late 90s. Can the Bulls win a title if Laurie and Wendell Carter Jr. become their two best players? Doug, let's start with you on this one.
Well, it really just depends how good they are. I mean, I'm a big believer in it's total talent. It's always total talent. It's not about, you know, which positions guys play. It's total talent of the roster. And certainly if Wendell and Lowry become superstar-style players, they will do so as big men who are extremely versatile, can shoot the three, can space the floor, you know, can create shots, can play defense, can do all the things necessary in order to be those types of players that can win you titles. But the fact that they play the 4 and the 5 absolutely doesn't you know, preclude that from happening. What really makes that difficult is the unlikeliness that the two of them are anywhere near good enough to make that happen, not that they play those positions.
Mark.
Yeah, look, I pretty much agree with Doug. I think I would say that the fact that they are a 4 and a 5 probably makes it more difficult for the Bulls to win a title if they are their two best players. But that's not to say it's impossible. But to Doug's point, it really depends on one or both of those guys being, you know, somewhere in the top 10, top 15 type players. And if one or both aren't that, then, you know, you can pretty much write it off irrespective if they're 4s, 5s, point guards, shooting guards, whatever position they play. If they're not top 10, top 15 type players, then it kind of doesn't matter unless you've got like a super stacked roster like the Boston Celtics, which doesn't normally happen. But I wouldn't say it's impossible for the Bulls to win a title with Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen as their best players, but it all depends on how good they're going to be. And I know, Fred, you think Lowry can be top 10, maybe top 5. So if he can do that, then maybe they can.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would add one little different thing and just to slightly put my opinion out. I think it'll actually be easier rather than more difficult if they became good enough players. If Lowry was top 5 and, say, Carter was top 15, and I don't think either will be that good. But if that happened, I think the fact that no one else is going to have two big men who could match up with them actually gives them a greater advantage. the difference is you want to be different than what everyone else is doing and more difficult to match up with. And I don't think the rest of the league would be geared up to match up with them if they became that good. Like I said, I don't think it's going to happen, but if it did, I think that actually create larger matchup problems rather than if they were guards and everyone has guards.
Yeah, I would agree with overall the idea that if they're both the best, the Bulls could still win a title. And it just, to me, is the quote-unquote lesser players on the team, if they still are Dunn Levine, that's the whole goal, is to spread the floor. And I can't think of a team in the league with a 4 and a 5 that could shoot. I have a very high shooting ceiling on Wendell Carter Jr. I think he can, if he develops into a rich man's Al Horford and hits the 3 at a 40% rate, and you got Laurie approaching that number 2, there are going to be the lanes to the, there will be no team in the league that will have better lanes to the basket. And to me, after rewatching some of the games this past year, Dunn and Levine need to take it to the rim with greater authority all year. It's got to happen. There were a couple of times I thought Dunn, most notably a dunk over Kelly Olynyk against Miami early in the season. I wanted to see that every game. That's got to happen more often. And if it doesn't happen, then the Bulls are not ever come close to achieving what they need to be. So I do agree. So we all agree on that one. Next question. Was it here? What would I do with this? Do you agree that the Bulls' timeline is with Laurie and Wendell Carter Jr. getting a star free agent is beneficial at 2020 at the earliest? Let's start with you, Mark, on that one. And that was from Triple Double.
I mean, it probably depends more on the cap situation more so than their years, I guess. And it really depends on the free agent as well. Like, are we talking about a 29-year-old free agent joining the team? Or are we talking like a 25-year-old free agent joining the team? So, I mean, there's some key variables to consider. But obviously, like a team like the Bulls, they've probably got maybe 2 to 3 years where they may have the cap space necessary to go after one of these big names. They've obviously signed Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn. Assuming he continues to progress, we'll need an extension in a year's time. Then you'll have big extensions, hopefully, for Lowry, Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. in, say, 3 to 4 years, depending on the player. So they've probably got a 2 to 3 year window where they can sort of have a decent amount of cap space, I guess, depending on what goes on around them to formulate a good team. But I wouldn't necessarily be thinking or be suggesting that the Bulls need to wait until Lowry and Wendell Carter Jr. are of an age where it makes sense to pair them with a certain free agent. But at the same time, you don't necessarily want to be bringing in a guy that's going to be 30 years old or something of that nature and pairing them with a 20 and a 21-year-old. That probably doesn't make sense. So, it's a tough question without knowing all the variables, but I don't think the Bulls should be steadfast in avoiding the free agency route. But if one comes across where it makes sense to go and grab a free agent, even if he's a little bit older, then why wouldn't you do it, I guess?
Doug?
Yeah, from my perspective, I think you sign as best players as you can as soon as you can. I think I have talked on my podcast and on the Big Red Bus as well, that I think next year the Bulls can figure out a way to get two max free agents on the team if they can convince the guys to sign, and that you go with Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving, not because I think they're the best two guys, but because they're two guys who have rumored to want to play together and rumored to want to play in the East where the competition sucks. Those two rumors both make a lot of sense from a lot of reasons, and the Bulls are the one team in the East that really has a reasonable path to make that happen and then still has enough here left afterwards to be an elite team. That team is the favorite by far to get out of the Eastern Conference for the next 3 years if everyone stays healthy and even could probably absorb one injury. So I think you would try to do that if it's possible. Now, probably won't happen. I give it like maybe a 5-10% chance of happening. But if it can, you do it. You do that next year. If you can't do that next year and you can't get a max guy and you can't get a real legit player, then sure, you wait till 2020 and try again. And 2021 is really your last shot before now. You've got to start extending everyone and it's going to be a big problem. So you really do have to try to make something happen within the next couple of years, and you do it as soon as you can. There's really no use waiting.
So let me, as a follow-up to this question, let me throw out one name which has been out there, a player I like a lot. Klay Thompson says, I want to come to Chicago, and I want to hang out with my brother who plays for the White Sox. I'll sign a max deal. Does that team good enough to win a title?
If they just get Thompson, no.
No, because, I mean, Klay Thompson isn't the lead guy, which is what you'd be signing him to be, effectively, at least by his pay packet. And at that point, Lowry and Wendell would probably still be 22, 21 years of age, and obviously Dunham Levine is still improving. Who knows if Parker's around in that scenario? Probably not, but I don't know. I would still say that team's too inexperienced to win a title, even if you do bring in a guy like Clay Thompson.
I think you'd at least have a chance, not in year one, but in year two or three if things developed and you were able to add another piece. But you're not going to be ready in year one. And even if you got Clay Thompson and someone else, you might not be ready in year one just because you still have a lot of guys who have a lot of improvement left to do in their careers. You still have a lot of very young pieces on the roster. So I don't think signing a max guy is about winning a title in year one either way. It's about acquiring the pieces before your cap situation changes and getting as much talent as you can over the next 3 to 4 years. And hopefully you're competing in year two, three, and getting closer and closer and building towards that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't feel like adding Clay Thompson makes the Bulls immediately a great team. I only think there's like a title contender. There's probably only like seven guys in the league who would say if they added Kawhi Leonard, and he's playing like 2014 Kawhi Leonard, does that make them a title contender?
Probably not. I would still say like you still got so many young pieces around a guy like Kawhi that you would still need time for those guys to get those playoff reps to the point where I guess, got the experience to actually go deep in the postseason. Whilst Kawhi would be huge to add to this core and would instantly make this core so much better and would make those players around him better and maybe would even speed up their development. They still need to make that or have that development time. So I think it's unreasonable to say that even if you add someone like LeBron James, that the team is just all of a sudden just going to go from, you know, winning 27 games last season to all of a sudden being a contender in the East. I think that's a little... It's a little unfair to the team because you're going to have two rookie bigs, well, not rookie bigs, but you'll have one that's in his second season, one in his rookie season, and if we're talking a year beyond, obviously they're still very inexperienced players. So I think it's unfair to put that on the Bulls' younger players, even if they do happen to sign a marquee guy, as unlikely as that is.
Well, I think we're talking right next year's free agency.
Yeah, so. That's right.
If we sign someone next year, Lowry will have had 2 years, Wendell will have one, and then we'll be going into their second and third. The thing I would just maybe add to that, and I still generally agree with Mark, I don't think we'd be there, but we don't know what's going to happen this year. You know, this year, Lowry might take a huge step up, or he might take a step back. Either could happen. Wendell Carter, even after a tremendous summer league, and we're excited about what we've seen so far, may be good, or he may be poor. Like, we don't know. So it's like super early to project how good this team will be. If they win 44 games and kind of hit Fred's upside and they become kind of like the 2004 Bulls of a team that wasn't expected to do much but becomes very, very good, you know, then my answer to this question is a lot different than if somehow they win 24 games this year. You know, a lot will depend on what happens. So if they're one of those teams that sneaks into the seventh seed and then they add someone like Kawhi, I don't know that they're ready to win a title, but they might be ready to go to the finals as early as next year, or even with Klay Thompson, they might be ready to go to the finals just by getting one more player, if they could get to the 40-plus win mark this year. Now, most people don't think that's going to happen, though.
I'll just say that there's few things I'm more sure of than Wendell Carter Jr. being a very good player in the NBA. I've watched a lot of... I probably watched more tape of Wendell Carter Jr. than I ever have on any college player, and there are things that he does that will absolutely translate to the league. Rebounding, defense, especially passing. He's most underrated passer. No one talks about that. I think he's just an absolutely fantastic player with a fantastic future. So I am not worried about him at all. You mentioned Lowry potentially taking a step back. Who knows with all the hit agendas potentially on the team if he gets less opportunities and if he does take a step back. That could happen. It might not be I don't believe he's too talented to be a big one. But if the Bulls somehow are able to land Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant next year, I think they're absolutely a title contender. Just adding a player of those... If Leonard is his former self, those kind of players you add, especially in the East, would immediately bring us up because we would have the best player in the East, unless Embiid takes another step that I don't foresee. But I mean, the Bulls would be in that dream scenario, or like they were in 2010, where you have a lot of very talented young players under contract with a superstar. And you're able to build signed quality role players around that. That's what sucks for the Sixers, is that they lost all those years, Embiid being hurt. They never were able to benefit with that, because immediately he's making, you know, pretty significant dollars when he's finally good and healthy. So, and who knows if that's going to continue. Anyhow,
Well, I mean, if we're using sixes as the example here, or an example, I mean, I think it. Well, I'd hope most people would agree with me that Embiid and Simmons are better prospects than both Carter Jr. and Markkanen. And we saw how good they looked in the regular season, and then how bad they looked at times in the playoffs. So that's what I guess I'm talking about in terms of even the young players, no matter how high of a pedigree they have, that they need time. So. Whilst adding a Kawhi Leonard would undoubtedly make the team better, he'll be reliant still on those players around him. And if guys like Simmons and Embiid struggle big time in the playoffs in their first go around, I think we could expect the same for Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr., Dunn, LaVine, etc. When as they get deeper into the playoffs, the harder it gets.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. The one thing I would say that Lowry and Wendell would have maybe over those two guys, and I agree with your general view that those two guys are probably two better prospects, is that the fit of Wendell and Lowry is maybe superior in terms of the modern NBA. Philadelphia doesn't really have shooters. Your two main guys aren't three-point shooters. Having two main guys who are three-point shooters and space the floor and fit kind of the schemes that are dominant in this NBA now and have the offensive efficiency that could carry would be a little better fit next to a guy like Kawhi who came in and, handled maybe the superstar load. It's not to say they couldn't hit the playoffs and all of a sudden they choke up and can't hit threes, but their skill sets would maybe become a little bit more complementary. I think that's the one thing that kind of excites me about this team is looking at Wendell and looking at Lowry, and if they could reach their potential, which I still don't think is as high as Fred, I think they become the perfect pieces to fit around anyone. Like their game fits around anyone. And I think one of the things the Sixers will struggle with, Embiid and Simmons, unless Simmons learns to shoot a three, is going to be a couple guys that are always going to be, you need the perfect three guys next to them that have just the right complementary skills to fit those guys who aren't going to space the floor and who are going to leave things crowded in the lane.
Great
point. Yeah, I think that's all fair. And I think we all agree that we have varying degrees on how high we are on Larry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr., but no matter what Bulls fan you are, whether you're the most optimistic like our friend Fred here, or whether you're a bit more pessimistic, I think basically every Bulls fan agrees that Larry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. at minimum are going to be very good NBA players. Who knows how good, but they're going to be good. I think the biggest concern with the Bulls roster is what's happening in front of them. I mean, they are big men. They need guys to get them the ball, and I feel for the Bulls to take that step, maybe not even into, I guess being in the finals, but to have real contention hope or hopes of contention. One of Dunn or LaVine really needs to be, an all-star level type player, if not both, because, there's not a lot of talent on that wing at the moment, and look, I think that's the biggest concern. And if the Bulls can't get another free agent wing that can support these guys, then it has to happen organically. And one of LaVine, Dunn, or even hopefully Jabari Parker, one of those guys really needs to turn into an all-star, because as good as it is to have that, that perfect match up front, you still need that perimeter, that perimeter threat and multiple options there. And whilst I still have hopes for Dunn, it remains to be seen for LaVine and Parker.
All great points. I will finally say I agree 100%, Doug, with your comments on the Sixers, that especially Simmons has got to learn to be able to shoot at least to the free throw line. He's at three-point range. The guy can't shoot outside of 5 feet, and that's a major problem. During the regular season, he can get away with it with his great athleticism. He's a fantastic passer. He does so many things well. But shooting is such a major part of today's NBA game that if he doesn't develop at least competence, I mean, to go 0-13 in a season from three is an embarrassment, but all his other metrics, shooting metrics, are just an embarrassment. And I don't know, hopefully it'll get there. I mean, not hopefully for the Bulls' sake, but I mean, if he gets to at least competent, then yeah, they might hit their ceiling. I think they're going to be a disappointment this year. They're clearly, to me, the third team, which I think is a disappointment because a lot of people have them challenging for the Eastern Conference title. But let's move on. If the Bulls manage to finish between 7th and 9th in the East this season, do you have concerns that they could end up like the 2013-14 Suns? Why or why not? Let's start out with you on this one, Mark. That's from Spook Longley.
do I have concerns that that'd be like the Suns of 13-14? I'm assuming that's when the Suns went 148 games or whatever it was and missed the playoffs or something of that nature. I'm assuming it was that season. But no, I wouldn't be concerned at all if the Bulls finish 7th and 9th. If they finish 7th and 9th, that would actually exceed my expectations for them. So if they were to do that, I would be pleasantly surprised, and I actually would call that season a success. And given the age profile of the roster, if they finish 7th and 9th in the East with this young roster, I would actually be kind of happy with that. That would be a good season in my book.
Yeah, I don't know how you could be too concerned if the Bulls have a good year, regardless of, you know, comparing them to any other team. You should always be concerned that this team's not going to be able to make the next step up, and I think that's maybe what the point was, is a team that wins a lot of games and then, you know, all of a sudden they just can't take the next step, and, you know, their pieces aren't really as good as the record, and they don't go anywhere. And I think in the end, you have to keep hoping the guys develop and become better players. But a good start is to win lots of games. Yeah, that gives me more confidence, not less.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that the gist of the question was, shouldn't we be undergoing a process like the 76ers did? The reason the stinking process took so long is because of major incompetence, you know, like passing on Giannis twice, picking Okafor ahead of Porzingis. If those missteps didn't happen, process wouldn't have taken 4 years, it would have taken 2. So, let's just, as a collective fan base, let's knock it off. We were able to turn Butler into 3 pieces, and we were able to hit another homer at Wendell Carter Jr. The rebuild's over. We got the young core here. Let's build with this, and let's figure it out. All right, next one. In my opinion, the top 6 teams in the East are the Raptors, Celtics, Sixers, Bucks, Pacers, and Wizards. Which one of the... this is me now. I'm saying this.
This sounds like you. You're running your own questions.
I'm going to read my own question here. Which one of the following teams do you feel is most likely to beat out the Bulls for the number 7 seed? The Pistons, the Heat, the Hornets, or Cavs? Let's start out with you, Doug, on this one.
Okay, think about that for a second. The Pistons, the Heat, the Hornets, or the Cavs?
Well, I mean, those are the only 4 I felt were worthy of vying.
I think the Heat would be the best of my picks for those teams. I really just don't see the Hornets or the Cavs as being particularly special or great in any meaningful way. Maybe they'd be fine. I don't know. I don't think those teams will be very good, though. The Pistons, maybe a second year of Blake Griffin, they'll get together a little better rather than integrating with the deadline, but I'm also not super high on them either, and I think they're going to look dysfunctional and kind of fall apart. So I would say the Heat.
Mark?
I'd say every team that you listed there, bar the Cavs, are probably more likely to finish above the Bulls. And again, I'm not as optimistic about this team going forward for this season, at least, as you guys are. I think best-case scenario, or most realistic scenario, is probably them winning 33 to maybe 35 games. I think that's probably where I would consider, you know, a good season, I guess, for this Bulls team coming up. But... you know, with me going into this question with that logic as my base, then I think Charlotte would probably be more likely to win more games than the Bulls, and I would certainly say the Pistons and the Heat as well. But if I had to pick one, I would pick the Heat, because I just believe in Eric Spoelstra. I believe in everything the Heat do. They always win, even if they don't have perceived talent. They just always find a way to have a really good defense, and they find a way to scrap out 500 ball. And in the East, that gets you the 7th seed.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good point. The Heat's definitely the team I'm probably most worried about, but, you know, talent wins to me in the long run, and I don't think there's any doubt, I hope not in this podcast, that the Bulls have a more talented roster than the Heat. When your best player is Gordon Dragic, it's on the second half of his career, on the downside of his career, and you got, you know, key players being guys like James Johnson, again, over 30, and the team, I just think the Bulls are the superior roster. Would we all agree with that, or is there another roster that you would rather have, especially looking, please don't tell me Charlotte, with the nuclear cap situation they have and their best player, unrestricted free agent at the end of this year?
No, I mean, the Bulls unquestionably have, if we're talking about, you know, the next 3 to 5 years, the Bulls are in an unquestionably better cap position. They've got far better talent in terms of talent that will be more relevant in 3 to 5 years' time. So, yeah, we all agree, I would assume we all agree at least, that the Bulls are the far more talented team in terms of the team that's projected to probably be better in the next 2, 3, 5 years, whatever the time period may be. But if we're talking next season, and going back to what we talked about before, the Bulls are going to be relying on a lot of young pieces, it's not out of the question to think some of these teams who may not necessarily have the talent upside, but they may have the production upside, at least for next season.
Doug?
Yeah, I would agree that the Bulls are the most have the best pieces for building towards the future of the teams you mentioned. I don't want to say the most talented per se, because talent to me implies how many wins you can get right now, but certainly they have the best future of those teams at the bottom of the East. And they're a team that wouldn't shock anyone if they became, you know, very good, I think, right now. Even though the Bulls aren't projected to be an amazing team, I don't think NBA pundits would be amazed if the Bulls won 40 games. I think they'd say, well, it seemed like a long shot, everyone developed that well, but they definitely had the talent that it was reasonable.
Oh, my gosh. This is the heart of what I'm getting at, is there's a lot of uncertainty here. And I remember in 2009, before the Salmons trade, we already had Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose wasn't the Derrick Rose that he was only two short seasons later. I remember driving and hearing the two dopes on the score telling everybody that there was no hope for the Bulls. They weren't going to be challengers for many, many years, regardless of what Derrick Rose was. And in 2 years, you have growth, and you're able to get the carcass known as Heinrich off the roster, and you're able to sign a bunch of great free agents, and then you have a contender. And I think that's what we're seeing here is there's a lot of uncertainty. How good are these guys going to be? And if you can just get two or three of these young players to really take that jump that we saw, I mean, we're going to have something special on our hands. And I think you saw with Golden State. Go back 3 years before Golden State won their first title. There is no one in the NBA or covered the NBA who thought that team had a legit shot of growing into a title contender. No one. You had Curry with a lot of injury issues, a lot of questions. He's too slight. He had, you know, Klay Thompson was a rookie. You know, he might be good. There was nothing, you know. So that's what makes this so exciting, is I think the unlimited future that will happen very quickly with young players.
Every team in the league, though.
No, right? You can't.
Like,
no, you can't.
And not every team, but like a lot of teams. Well, if their young guys pan out and become
like
great
what
players.
Team, though, Doug? The name of a team that you could say that about. Orlando? Are we really going to say it about Orlando? Look at all these young. I'm talking about the young teams. Atlanta. I'm talking about the teams that are like have undergone a rebuild. I mean, Orlando's been going for a rebuild for a decade. But like some teams, even New York, I don't think you can. I don't think you can realistically say with some of the cap carcasses that are strewn over these rosters that can happen quickly. Unless you're talking about like what happened with the Lakers where LeBron joined there. But could you realistically said the Lakers had a chance within 3 years? Maybe the Lakers, they did have some significant young talent that potentially could have grown into something. The Bulls have like seven pieces that could potentially grow into something.
And in 1 year, you may find that all seven of those are not going to grow.
That is true.
So, I mean, I mean, right now they're positioned to be a team that could in the next year become very good. But it's also quite reasonable to expect that, you know, they aren't going to do that. You know, so maybe for this year, they're the team that has the best chance. But then next year in the draft comes along and some of these bad teams, they get another piece. And now, you know, instead of us having Lowry and Wendell this year, they have whoever they drafted this year and whoever they draft next year. So there's always going to be teams that have potential. And sure, I hope the Bulls are the ones that have the right guys. But I don't know. There's no reason, I think, to expect that the Bulls scenario is so much better than everyone else.
Oh, that's way too much negativity to close this up. So we gotta go. We gotta go one more question for some positivity, which is this. And this will be our last question. We'll wrap this baby up. Minnesota's All-Star Jimmy Butler has begun to seriously contemplate his future with the franchise. Reports are Butler and Thibodeau will meet on Monday. Love to get your take on this latest development. And if you're in Tib's shoes, what is the right thing to do, and what is the thing he'll most likely do? Let's start out with Doug on this one, and we'll go to Mark for the grand finale.
Well, I think the right thing to do is he has to figure out whatever he can do to get Butler to stay. What will Tibbs do? I have no idea. He'll figure out a way to bring Joakim Noah on the roster and probably discuss some plan to do that. I don't think Tibbs is a very good communicator or salesman. I think he's going to drive everyone out of that team, and they're just going to fall apart. That's what I think will happen. And that will ultimately, if it does happen, make this a very poor deal for the Timberwolves indeed in the long run.
Mark.
Fred, how much are you loving this run?
It's beyond love. It's at a whole other level or nirvana. Go ahead. Let's, I can't wait to hear this one.
Well, I mean, it's hard to say because we don't 100% know what Jimmy Butler's issues are, I guess. Like, we can assume that it's with the younger players, Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. Maybe they're the bane of Butler's existence at the moment, but it's hard to say. Maybe Thibodeau is the one that ends up leaving before Butler. Who knows? But, I mean, he's not going to move him straight away. He's not going to trade him now. There's no way that Thibodeau is going to make a move like that. So Butler will be playing for the Wolves at the start of the season. I was going to make the Joakim Noah joke, but Doug beat me to that one. So I would assume that's going to happen at some point, because why wouldn't it? Every other ball's there. And so at the same point, we should probably be on the phone and giving them Amir Sheik as quickly as possible. But we'll get the whole band back together.
What's the right move? What's the right move?
What's the right move? I mean, the right move is just to hear him out, hear what he has to say, rather. And you have to keep him initially. Like, you're too close to the season to trade him now. So they have to keep him around, try to make him happy, try to make it work. And if it's not for whatever reason, then maybe thinking about it in season, maybe doing a deal if you can. But, I mean, he wants the Lakers. It seems like Jimmy Butler is heading to LA, or maybe the East Coast with Kyrie Irving, like Doug noted before. But I think it's probably more likely that he heads west. But I think the right move is keeping Butler right now, because how bad would it look, you know, trading Jimmy Butler pretty much 12 months after? It would be terrible.
Doug, I made you the GM of Minnesota. What's the right move for you?
Well, if I don't think I can get a deal done with Butler to stay long term, then I would trade him.
Exactly. I mean,
it's an even worse deal if you lose him for nothing. You know, the only thing you could say is if your team starts off well, I would wait at least till the deadline, and because I don't think you're going to get anything now, so I'd wait till the deadline, hope my team is positioned to be a good playoff team if I'm like a top 3 seed, and then hope that I have enough success in the playoffs that changes Jimmy Butler's mind. But otherwise, you got to get something for him if you can, because it's going to look terrible if you trade him now, but it's going to look even worse if he leaves next year for nothing.
All right, so that was closer to the right answer. The right answer is clearly you cancel the meeting on Monday, and you call up the Lakers, and you figure out a way to get Brandon Ingram on the Minnesota roster for Jimmy Butler. And whatever you have to do...
Why would the Lakers do that? Why would the Lakers do that? They didn't do it for Kawhi Leonard. Why are they going to do it for Jimmy Butler?
Well, because I feel that they should do it for Jimmy Butler. Why? Because LeBron, if you talk to LeBron, he'll say, all right, yeah, absolutely, and we're doing that deal. You don't think he would... Well, first of all, I don't think there was ever any advantageous deal for the Lakers and the Spurs. I don't know if that ever came to that. Was there ever any proof that ever... We were ever there, that there was ever any deal that was going to happen? I don't know. But I think it's definitely different in that Jimmy has made it clear he wants to be in L.A. And if LeBron says, yeah, do the deal, then you do the deal. I think that's the only one that you should try to make happen. I think that's a perfect fit. You get Jimmy where he wants to be, and you get a great, fantastic young player who I think will fit with Towns and the young players on that team, and you salvage this complete disaster. I mean, this deal should have been made or talked about or approached the minute you saw him, all the nonsense he was pulling in the offseason with all the media stuff. I mean, it's insane to me that nobody even talked about that. Like, hello, this guy's talking about other teams, and he's on the payroll for the Minnesota Timberwolves. It was one of the most... Can you imagine if that was happening in Chicago? How would we feel? You know, I know we don't pay a lot of attention to it anymore, but it's just insanity to me that this hasn't happened already. Like... Every day that goes on, here's the major problem. Number one, let's start the season with him. What happens if he tears up his knee in the first game? Then you've got the problem that we're talking about, right? You can't risk that. If who's going to trade for him if he tears his ACL in the first game? Every day that goes by, you're risking you're going to get nothing for him, number one. And I think the return on investment will be far less if you wait to the All-Star break. That's my point. I can't believe it's gotten to this point. He should have been traded in the offseason. He should have been traded the minute LeBron signed with the Lakers. They should have had extensive talks, but I don't think Coach Rayman felt that was necessary. I don't even think he picked up the phone. I'd be shocked.
I think you are missing out on the point that for the Timberwolves, making the playoffs has meaning. For their fans and having an exciting season has meaning. So if you are getting value in terms of another playoff run, that value may exceed whatever you can get for Jimmy Butler now, regardless of even if he leaves. So even if you make it to the second round of the playoffs next year, that might be worth more than getting, you know, second-tier prospects to add to this team for the future. Because you're not going to get more value than Jimmy Butler, which means even if you get, you know, some guys who are worse than Jimmy to complement the guys you have, you're going to be out of the playoffs again. So I think there is some value to them in keeping him and trying to make the playoffs. I don't think you can undersell that.
Doug, I think you're touching on what's the problem with Tibbs, which it was a little bit different timeline, but it's still the same thing.
Not the problem with Tibbs. Timberwolves organizational problem. They're an organization that hasn't won 6 titles. They're an organization that hasn't gone to the playoffs much. They're an organization that's been like in hell for a long, long time. And so for them, even just getting to the first round of the playoffs in the West last year was probably an amazing treat for their fans. I remember in 2004 when the Bulls went to the playoffs again, and it was unbelievable in the United Center. It's still the loudest I've heard it there ever. And it was because we had not been there in so long, and it was a first-round series. And so the Timberwolves fans are having that type of feeling right now, and I think there is real value to them even just making a second playoff run with Jimmy Butler.
Really quick, though, just as it would be sacrificing, you know, long-term health for wins in December is short-sighted and foolish, couldn't you make that same argument about getting a first? What did they win? They got into the first round and lost in 5. Yeah, they made the playoffs, but you sacrifice the potential future of Dunn, Levine, Wiggins, Larry Markkanen, and Towns, a team that could have grown together and been a real contender by the time the Golden State's declining. It's insanity.
I mean, well, it's a sunk cost. You can't undo that. Whatever you get back for Butler is going to suck.
And they were third in the West before Butler got injured. So, look, they went out. They were the 8th seed. They unfortunately had to go against the Houston Rockets. That's why they went out in 5. But before Butler went down, they were the third seed in the West. Everyone wasn't necessarily as doom and gloom about the Wolves at that point. So, let's see what happens.
We both know when they were third seed in the West, they were 3 games out of the playoffs still. That's how close the West was. I love this argument people threw out there. Oh, they were third seed in the West. Yeah, they were 3 games out of the playoffs. That's how close things were.
When they had
number one and number two, I always hear about when Butler went down, he still played 2,100 minutes. You know the Nuggets, who didn't, their prize free agent signing was Paul Millsap, who played like half as many minutes due to injury. You don't think that hurt the Nuggets, who were pretty close to making the playoffs? I mean, it's insanity. Like, Towns and Wiggins played 82 games. I'm so sick of these Tibbs apologists making these arguments that they would have been a lot better. Is every guy in the team going to be healthy? I mean, God, Taj played top 12 minutes. And finally, just to wrap it up, the big picture here has nothing to do with any of these guys. The best player long-term on that team is Towns. And he still, as of today, has not signed that agreement that you thought was a layup, right? I think Towns is going to pass on it if we keep on going down this path, because he doesn't like Jimmy, he doesn't like the 2012 Bulls that he's assembled around him, and he's like, you know what, I think there's a good chance Towns takes his restricted qualifier. And, well, I mean, at that point, they're going to have to trade him, but I think he wants out. We'll see.
No,
that would be the ideal situation.
That
and yeah.
Look, if we're talking big picture, the big picture here is that there's a headline that caught your eye that happened to be a negative one about the Wolves and Tibbs, and you wanted to talk about it because it very much suits your agenda. That's the big picture here.
Oh, I love you, brother. You know it's true. All right, man. Guys, let's pull in this big red bus. This was a fantastic discussion with both you guys. And let's finalize things up. I want to get official predictions on. I don't think we've got one yet from you, DT. But let's start out with Mark. Official predictions as of the day before training camp starts, before we get before we see how great Parker looks and all these great things that happen in preseason and you revise your totals upward. I want to get your win totals for this upcoming season. Let's start with you, Mark.
Well, before I do that, I just want to make it very clear again to your listeners, to the millions of listeners tuning in, which I'm sure there are millions, But that you and I, Fred, we have a bet going on. Yes. And I'm going to hold you to account to this, because even now you're trying to backpedal it from it. You did it before.
No, I stick by it. I will.
You predicted the Bulls would win 44-47 the game. So anything less than that, I win the bet. But if you want me to put me on record in terms of how many wins they're actually going to get, lock me in for a 32-50 season.
32-50. Doug?
I'm going to say 38.
I love it. That's more positive. I'm going to say 41 right now, and that's probably going to be revised up. I think they're going to be 41-41, and that will be good enough for the seventh seed in the pathetic
Eastern Conference. By you saying that, are you saying you've already lost the bet?
If they're 41-41 and I lose the bet and I got to wear a Heinrich shirt for a week and get video of it, that's fine. I'll live with that. Where I live, I'm sure there'll be a lot of dopes coming up to me. Yeah, Heinrich, great. Oh, yeah, he was fantastic. So, yeah.
Well, we're all winners then, I suppose.
So, it'll be fine. My biggest regret is they somehow do win 44 wins and you have to wear that Valentine jersey. They didn't mandate that you get all his ink, too. That would have been the best. But anyhow.
You should have also mandated me getting schooled by some random non-NBA player in some league or the Drew League, rather, as well. So maybe we could put that into the next bet.
I'll have to edit that out. will we pull this in? Will we pull the beautiful big red bus in? And it is fantastic having you as the second passenger. Well, you were the first passenger, too, so you've been our only passenger so far. As we look backward and say adieu to our good friend Mark in Australia. As we bring in the big red magic bus, until next time, if it ain't Bulls, it ain't basketball, and I love you guys.
All right, thanks, Fred.
You guys could say I love you, too.
It's always a pleasure, Doug.
I love you both.
It's been great. What a great show with the two legends and Mark. All right, guys, have a good one.